Sally, I forgot and didn't realize and completely forgot that it was as low as, what'd you say, 54 cents back in...
It was in 1963, it was 54 cents.
Well, that's insane. That's just totally insane. But it's all been insane. If you remember, at one point, women couldn't even vote.
Yeah.
I mean, and you can bring it, dial it all the way back. And some of the things, you look at human beings and humanity, and we are a strange group, I have to tell you. And how we've progressed to this point and been so slow, it's like we're making giant steps, the leaps now forward. What took hundreds and thousands of years to make any progress. You know what I mean? Right?
Yeah, everything is exponential. And I think, you know, it took 54 years to get, 30 more cents on the dollar. But I think within the next 10 years, I just don't think parity is going to be a real problem in the next 5 to 10 years.
Well, the big question on everyone's mind, it's a gender thing, or is it? World peace, religion, sex, money, politics, climate change, big business, big ideas and big egos. Nothing is off limits. As I'm joined by some of the most accomplished and highly opinionated women from the far left, the far right, and the far reaches of the planet. This is Malcolm Out Loud, and you're listening to Life, Liberty, and the Pursuit of Pleasure. Well, every year around the beginning of April, there's something called Equal Pay Day. Equal Pay Day. I usually typically hear about it every year, and it's a day that says, okay, women are now making as much as men, like you have to work for free for certain months of the year, and now we're sort of like starting even again. So what they're saying is that part of the talk that you've heard is that women only make 80 cents on the dollar compared to what men make, but then these numbers even get more skewed than that, because now you've got, you know, then you can get into the various groups like do black men make as much as white men? How about Native American people, Asians, Hispanics? Do they make less or more? There's a whole study on this thing they do. As you can imagine, we have a study for everything you could ever imagine in the world. They got a study on it. And this interesting piece comes from The Guardian. Today we have with us Andrea Pennington from Monaco. It's always good to have you back on here. And Sally Fernandez. Which is right now, she's in the southeast of the United States in Florida, but part of the year you're in Europe as well. All right, so let's talk about this wage thing. You're both in a pretty good position to speak about this. Now, I know you have read the article here from The Guardian on the Equal Pay Day, and it is sort of something they measure every year when they look at this. Why do you think that is, if it is, and do you believe that that's the case? And if so, why do you think that is? And Andre, have you go first here. What do you think?
Well, you and I have talked about this before, Malcolm. It's definitely true. It's definitely real. I've definitely seen it in many sectors in business, including in healthcare. You know, as a physician, it's astounding to see that a woman surgeon, for example, or anesthesiologist, someone who's, you know, caring for your very life, why should she be paid any less than her male counterpart when they've gone through the same training and have the same background and the same expertise? It's something that bugs me. And as you and I talked about before, I don't know how you actually can change it.
Yeah, I remember we did touch on that on a different, it wasn't sort of like we'll do today, but I remember that. And I think I said you have to get in the streets in March, didn't I?
Yeah, something like that. Start a movement.
Well, everything takes a movement today if you're going to change the paradigm somehow and, you know, the way people behave and the way they act and so on and so forth. I don't know. Sally, what's your take?
Well, you just said the way people act. And, you know, I absolutely agree with Andrea in terms of if women are doing the same job, same education, they deserve the same pay. But I wonder whether part of it has to do with the way women negotiate versus how men negotiate in the workplace. And whether women are actually speaking up and fighting, because I mean, you've seen the medical career, Andrea, I've been in corporate and the finance business. I see it there, but I just wonder whether it's women just don't have the same skills to negotiate.
Yeah,
I think
Sally,
that's what it comes down to. You know, there are some statistics that show that women will over if a 20-year-old goes into the workforce, that she could lose upwards of, say, $400,000 in the 40-year career. But then you have women that, if they don't negotiate when they first start out their career, they could lose upwards of 500,000. These are just studies. But I wonder whether it has to do with just women typically aren't really fighting to get the higher pay.
I think that's a great point because obviously in business, we always learn as we're moving up in the ranks to be the CEO or a manager, you want to pay people as little as you possibly can. So the first offer made, I wonder how many women are actively negotiating. I know it didn't happen for me until a good 5+ years into my professional career when I was savvy enough and courageous enough to actually say, no, I want, this amount of money.
Isn't it sort of a stereotype too, though, ladies, that comes back to back yonder when when women were mostly home with families and with children, and men were out. I mean that's a whole stigma with that coming back. I mean back generations back, the way it used to be before women really got into the workplace. Isn't that sort of part of that stigma that men were the providers? They were like, they had to go out and, kill the cow for dinner and, and work and bring it home. And isn't that sort of where a lot of that comes from in society, our early stigma?
I think it's probably the early stigma, but it's still there when you talk about women who want to have children versus women who choose not to. So I think part of the problem with the gap is that many women take time out to rear their families, to raise children, and then come back into the workforce. So that stigma exists
See, to me, that's the
because.
problem right there, Sally. Let me jump in. Andre, that's the real problem right there. Sally just hit it right on. That's where women got shortchanged and really screwed in the whole proposition here. Why aren't men forced to have kids?
If men were having the children, they'd be having the gender gap
Well, but
problem.
why didn't God do
Yeah.
something equal here and make both sexes have babies? Like, shouldn't men? I mean, I'm not saying just the men have the babies. They're like, I think there are some creatures, some insects or animals or something that happens with. I know there is, where the men have to do that, play double duty or something. I think society gets back to them there, maybe. But why isn't it with human beings? Like, why didn't the Lord say, well, okay, now I'm going to give half the deed to the women and half the deed to the men, and you'll have to take it up between yourselves who's going to have the baby? Andrea, you're the physician. Why don't you answer
Oh,
that?
that's a clever one. Well, I can't step on the toes of the divine to figure out why he/she chose to create us this way. But I think, to Sally's point earlier, yes, we can go back to sort of the Industrial Revolution and see where women had to step in as men were off at war. But if we look even further back, the downgrading of a woman's worth goes even far beyond that. Way back when women weren't necessarily working outside of the home, but just in terms of their societal role, we've endured, centuries of being looked at as a second-class citizen. And now when you add in race on top of it, I think what we're seeing is this really pervasive sense that not all humans are created equal.
Andrea, you hit on something important there. And speak about that a moment for me. Let's take just a minute and dive into that, please, because let's tell folks, first of all, based on what you just said, you would be in that company. Tell folks what your background is, your ethnicity, and obviously people can hear you and they know you're a woman and they know you're on the show here and you're one of the co-hosts, so that's clear. But tell folks where you, and then tell us the story of where that comes from, because you had to kind of over, you're kind of a real unique success story to me because you had to overcome all these stereotypes, yeah?
Yeah, and it's something I grew up with. I'm an Afro-Latina. My mother is from British Guyana, so she has more of a West Indian kind of vibe, and my father is African American. But when my mother immigrated to the United States, and mind you, this was in the 50s, here she was, a dark-skinned woman with a funny accent. She came to America as a nurse, and when she started working in the hospitals, She was appalled at how these physicians spoke to nurses. And she thought, you know, you can't speak to a nurse like she's a lesser citizen. My mom is pretty feisty, and she ended up going to medical school when I was just 3 years old and became a physician. But she was always this feisty woman who would speak up for what she wants. So to Sally's earlier point about negotiating, man, I learned from a woman early on that if you don't speak up for what you deserve and what you want, you will just get what is, you know, kind of either offered or whatever's left over. So for me, as a Afro-Latina, as a woman of color, I've definitely seen and always had this keen eye watching out for how people are treated. And, you know, you brought up this point about the article in The Guardian. I found it incredible that in Puerto Rico,
yes,
you know, it's the only state or, you know, entity where women are actually out-earning men by 2 cents on the dollar. So what did they do such that the role of women has been not only preserved, but when they move into the workforce, they're getting paid what they deserve and more? How did that happen?
What's going on?
I think it's a matter of respect. I mean, I think my Latino men, they know that a woman, you know, she can hold it down. She holds it down at home for the in-laws, for her own parents, for the dogs and the cats, the babies, as well as handling it outside of the home. I think there's a greater level of respect in the Latino community, maybe not so much in the U.S. proper, but definitely in territories in other countries.
Interesting.
What do you think, Sally?
No, I absolutely agree with you. And I think you can see it even in the U.S. in terms of certain communities where the woman really rules the roost. And in often cases tends to work more hours doing several jobs, especially in some of the inner cities. And so it you know, it's interesting because you're talking about your background and different countries. And I'm looking at a map here where they have the gender wage gap in the U.S., and that kind of puts us at, it has South Korea at 40%, and it has Hungary, you know, down at 3.8%, where the U.S. is about 17%. I know this is kind of fair to you people. I'm sitting here looking at this map. But it's just quite interesting when you look at the countries. And I wonder whether that has to do with the comment that you just made, Andrea, in terms of whether, you know, when you get to Hungary and Sweden, whether there's a higher respect for women, and therefore they have equal wages or more parity with the men, and whether it's more of a geographic, cultural standing. And because the United States is so multi-mixed, it's really hard to separate it.
Yeah. Well, you bring it back to the big statement here that in that article, again, that you're all referring to in The Guardian about wages, it says, and I quote, on average, women spend less time in paid employment because there are only 24 hours in a day, and women are more likely than men to spend their time in unpaid work. Things like, you know, unimportant things like raising children, taking care of elderly family members, doing the housework so it's a clean environment, you know. What's more, men are more likely to hold senior positions and work in occupations that pay better. And all of these factors are important in understanding. So what they're saying is that's where a lot of the pay gap exists. Do you buy that?
Well, I certainly do. I think if you look geographically over here in Europe, there is greater parity with, for example, maternity and paternity leave. So where women in America are generally the ones either forced or voluntarily taking time off to take care of the babies when they're first born, over here in Europe, men are more willing than not to also take time off. So I think when you look at the number of hours worked in America, we women are not on the job floor as much as men.
Well, that seems to be one of the big considerations here, Sally, they're talking about.
I think it's true. I mean, there's another study that says that, excuse me, that women who choose not to have families tend to actually make more money than the men.
Sure, sure, I buy that. Well, they're focused on career. They're focused on career, Sally. So that should be the case, right? But here's the bigger thing that really, I think the only one you can blame, and I'm going to speak out here, and you'll both probably whack me in the head, but that's okay. I'm accustomed to it. But here's the problem with this, and the one I blame is women.
Mm.
I blame the women.
Well, I...
Why do they tolerate it? Well, hold on. Why do they tolerate it? Why do women tolerate this when you know they're capable of doing the same work, if not better in some cases, as the case is? But so why do they, and what, and I'm just feeding off of what you said, Sally, earlier when we opened up, and you said that, you know, women sort of accept that. They sort of mandate themselves into that role. And I'm just saying, I sort of agree with you that those who speak up and say, you know what, I'm worth more, well, you probably get more. I mean, if you shoot for more, go for more. But I think a lot of women have played into that stereotype, and I think they believe they're worth less than some of the men.
I don't know that that's true, Malcolm. Well, I don't think
I don't
they believe they're worthless. I believe that there's a great deal of fear. Mm-hmm. I think many women mm-hmm. feel like mm-hmm. they need the money. They need those jobs. And so to Sally's point about not negotiating, some women either don't know how mm-hmm. or they're too afraid to. There's too much on the line. So I wouldn't say that there's a pervasive belief that we should earn less.
Right. Well, what I mean by that.
A great deal of fear.
What I mean, I don't disagree with what you just said at all, but what I mean by that is that they've convinced their inner mind. Andrea, everything is mind controlled. Everything we do and we be and we are every day is our mind tells us that. And what I'm saying is many of these women have convinced themselves that, oh, society says it should be this way or it should be that way or this is how it was done. That's how my mother did it. And when my parents were together, how they, in other words, it becomes part of the fabric of what they know. That's what I mean by convincing themselves, or they think that, you know, maybe there isn't another way, which kind of plays into, we're sort of saying the same thing, but it kind of plays into the fear factor, Andrea. They are, it is fearful, but that's what they were taught and raised with, I think.
If you go back to the Guardian article and you look in terms of the racial aspect of it, mm-hmm. and you look at, see, Asian men and Asian women
right.
are up there higher than white women. That speaks to the Asian mentality and what their work ethic is. And, you know, they have children while they're working. You know, they don't stop. It's
yeah, now you see the Asian men make more than white men. Did you see that?
Yes.
That's wonderful. That you see, so that kind of plays.
It comes to work. That comes to work ethic. I used to live in Asia.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, they just, they'll work. I
right.
mean, they'll work tons of jobs. They'll take care of generations of families. I mean, there's no stopping. So it feeds into that. But so when you go back to the comment you made about women, it is societal from a standpoint that some women are just in a position that they can't afford to alienate the employer or challenge the employer or ask. They can't afford to lose their job. There are other women that are willing to fight and negotiate, and if they don't get it, they'll go find another one. So it just, I think it has to do with education. It has to do with your own nuclear family, where your responsibilities lie. There's just so many variables. So when people say equal pay for women, it's very difficult because it's factored on so many different levels. And if a woman chooses to have a family, that is a choice. And if she's not making as much money and working as many hours, that is a choice. But if she is working the same job, the same education, the same hours, and not making the same money, that's a problem.
All right. Well, here, as we pause a moment here, some of the things to consider ahead. What about Congress? Is this something that they should mandate? I'm just asking. Should there be mandated that women get paid as much as men? Should there be something passed that says, you know what? You can't pay them less for the same job. But of course, and you know what really steers me, we'll talk about this later, but the politicians always say that during election season. But then you find out then when they're running their campaigns and when they're running government officials in there, the women still get paid less. So sounds to me like it's just rhetoric talk that men use during election time to get the women vote. But I don't see that they ever followed through with it. So what about that? And what about the wage gap making a difference between men and women in romantic relationships? Does that change the cycle of things? I wonder. We'll find out just ahead. Well, we're a new breed of talk radio, and with a new breed of host and shows to entertain and inform you. It's America Out Loud Talk Radio, with shows like Blue Lives Radio, OPSEC Radio Special Operations, shows that impact your health, like The Misdiagnosed Life, The Dr. Stem Show, What's Inside You, Mind, Body, Energy, and our newest show, Life, Liberty, and the Pursuit of Pleasure. Thank you for sharing part of your day with us here at America Out Loud Talk Radio Network.
Welcome back. You're listening to Life, Liberty, and the Pursuit of Pleasure. I'm Dr. Andrea Pennington. She is Sally Fernandez, and he's Malcolm Out Loud. Malcolm, you know, we spoke before about the alpha bitch. And I want to bring this into this conversation about the wage gap. And I'm talking about the woman who has decided to work outside of the home. And in order to compete, in order to appear more credible, she's taken on a little bit of masculine energy to really hold it down in the C-suite or to run her own company. And what we're seeing now is women are being referred to as an alpha bitch or an alpha bee, if we want to be a little nicer. And what I have told you before, that what I saw doing this research for my latest book, The Orgasm Prescription for Women, is that there are sexual hang-ups. There are problems in relationships that women are experiencing as a result of working outside of the home, trying to compete and match up to their male counterparts. The guys are kind of saying at home, well, gee, she's doing everything. She earns more than me. She's bossier than me. She runs more than me. What am I good for? I'd love to dive into that conversation.
Well, I want you to know up front, both Sally and Andrea and Arvelis, I want you to understand something about me. And I hear what you're saying, Andrea. And we did talk about that. It was a very interesting conversation we had in another show. And if you haven't heard that show with Andrea and another co-host, got to go back and hear it, because it was quite an enlightening conversation we had. And you know, I have to tell you, though, for me, Andrea, I have, and let me speak, you know, some of you guys that are listening, I know you men love listening to the show, but let me say this, I have no problem in who I am, in my own masculinity, with making the bed in the morning for my woman. I have no problem with it at all. I have no problem with cooking dinner on the grill for her. I have no problem with making a martini or a drink for her when she comes home and takes her feet. I have no problem with taking her shoes. But I have zero problem with any of that. In fact, I am happy and preferred to do it. So am I the exception or the rule?
I think you're the exception.
Sally?
Well, I didn't want to insult you, but you have a challenger. My husband's pretty much like that. But you know him, and that's why you two get along so well.
Well, take a minute now. Tell folks, you got to tell Andrea, because she doesn't take, for me, and I want listeners to hear this too, and let Andrea hear this. Tell folks quickly about Joe. But I mean, like, the guy is incredible. And and I want them to know, like, his stamina and his age, and like, he just blows my mind. If I could grow up to be like him, that'd be just terrific. Go ahead.
Well, just quickly, yesterday was his birthday. He turned 89. Oh. And he just asked me if he could use the treadmill while we were having this radio show, and I said no, because the vibration would come through the floor. It's underneath. So I've just been incredibly fortunate. God, I met him when I was 23 at Citibank. We were both working there. He was a senior executive, just a very powerful guy. And he had an offer to move to Hong Kong. And I was being made vice president at JP Morgan at the same time. And he said, we're staying here. Your career is more important. You know, I'm kind of winding my down. I've had my time. And I was like, forget it. I'm packed. So I wasn't giving up the opportunity. But he's been like that. And I think it's his outlook. He's a very positive person that adds to his health. And he's taught me a lot. So we'll see what happens when my next book makes it big and I end up making more money than he's ever made. And we'll see what happens.
Well, your books are doing phenomenal, but and you know, he'd be the one celebrating you when that happens. I know that.
He would be. I kind of get spoiled on some of these conversations because I can't relate. You know, I've had we're going on 38 years together, amazing. He's my best friend. He's my editor. We're 24/7. I don't have children. We weren't able to have children. And we've just had a great life. So it's, I try to make sure I don't get too far removed and not understand some of the plight that a lot of women are having, which are it, there's, it's very difficult to manage a lot that they're juggling. And, but I think they just need to be taught the tools. And I may be digressing just quickly, but, you know, I think a lot of these women organizations just do an injustice to women because they keep them feeling that they're down for reasons other than the fact that they're just not strong within themselves. And so I think we just need to empower women in a much more positive way.
Well, Sally, my question for you is, how do we do it? In your case, you had a strong man who was willing to back you, to support you, and you were able to grow without having to become an alpha bitch like some other people. How would the average woman learn these skills? How does she advocate for herself so that she can earn what she's deserving? This is the question that I'm really, really struggling with.
I think we just need to keep saying the kinds of things that we're saying, and we need to find ways to get these messages across. And I don't know. I personally don't know how to do it. I try to write books. I have a strong woman in my book. If people read it and they want to be like her. I mean, I don't, other than to just keep getting this message, you know, actually this show, you know, Life, Liberty, and the Pursuit of Pleasure, all of these messages are very positive and they're coming from strong women and Malcolms. And I just think, just keep saying it. Finding ways to get the messages out.
So, Andrea, I'd like to pick up on Sally. I think I can say to you, to give you some comfort at this moment, because I respect that. You've said that a couple of times, and I really respect that you generally mean that when you ask that question. And my gut tells me, and I'm just going to stick my head out here, but I think the tide is turning. I think Sally's right. I think the tide is beginning to turn. I think we're in a transitional generation where women now are becoming truly empowered to be equal to men. It's taken a long time for that to happen, you know, too long, in fact, but I think it's happening.
Yeah. Well, you're right. I think maybe it doesn't require a movement, which I couldn't see happening, and I couldn't see people, women, just walking out of their jobs. But to your point about the changing tide, I agree with you. I think the millennial women, these up-and-comings who are a little bit maybe over-entitled, I don't think they'll stand for it. I don't think they'll stand for the status quo. So maybe we will see a change. I certainly know my daughter, who is only, you know, going on 11, she would definitely raise an eyebrow to someone who would try to pay her less than a male counterpart. So maybe you're right.
Yeah, you know, and as a father of a daughter myself, I absolutely believe that girls are every bit as equal as the boys are, a boy and a girl. And you know what? I 100,000,000% believe she can do anything he can do. Okay. The only thing I want young women to do, Andrea, is to learn self-defense. This is me speaking now. Self-defense, martial arts or something, so they can kick his ass when it becomes a problem, you know?
Well, I do not disagree.
I think Andrea brought up a good point in terms of the millennium group. You know, the next generation are much stronger minded, independent, much more open than I am. And I think that will really set them straight when they get into their careers and they decide what they're going to do. And they're all going to probably be entrepreneurs of something. So I think it is a kind of a positive movement. I think also it's in some ways, Ivanka Trump is adding to that image that a lot of women want to strive for.
Andrea, speak to that, because I know you're not a Trump fan specifically, but speak to Ivanka as a woman, would you?
Well, actually, yeah, I would agree with you, Sally. I would say that the image of being a little glitzy and girly girl, but still a boss and running a company and feeling empowered, I think that is a great model in the most holistic term, for the women that are up and coming. So, you know, maybe you're right. Maybe there will be a positive spin to this presidency.
Well, Andrea, I'm not going to let you off the hook that easy. Hold on, hold on, hold on.
I didn't think you would.
Hold on. Yeah, that's a cop out now. But answer me this, please. It just honestly, truthfully, I mean, I'm not being a wise guy here. Does not Ivanka hold those same qualities that we're speaking about? Forget the father. I'm not talking. This is not about that. I'm talking about her. Does she not hold the qualities you just said and that Sally just said?
What, you mean being outspoken, being empowered? Absolutely.
Strong woman in every regard, yeah?
Absolutely. I think certainly it helps to be a socialite. It helps to have the upbringing that she did and so on.
Yeah.
But in terms of her being a model type of a figure for American young women, she absolutely embodies that. She embodies that powerful, strong woman who's not going to take a lot of smack, I think probably because she heard a lot of smack at home.
Whatever it is.
On April 4th, Equal Pay Day, she was out tweeting about how women deserve to have equal pay.
Yeah, but it bugs me that politicians say that and they never do it, Sally. It just really is irritating. But let me get back to this. The big question I have for you folks right now, we're talking about some of this pursuit of pleasure as you started off talking when we came into this segment, Andrea. And so does this wage gap that exist and the societal impact and factors we're speaking about today, does it make a difference between men and women when it comes to romantic relationships?
Well, it doesn't have to, but, you know, my research and experience has shown that it does. Now, again, for many men, we are seeing a shift. Like, there are many house husbands that are actually quite comfortable with their role, and that their wife or partner is the primary breadwinner doesn't cause any major issues. But there are the outliers. There are these women, as I mentioned, who've become the alpha bee, where they don't know how to turn it off. That's the problem. They've had to so overcompensate by taking on that young, that masculine energy and you know, they're handling stuff. You know, that's what we do. And they stay in their heads. So what I've seen is that when they get home, they don't know how to get back into their body and to transition into the girl in the relationship. And most of the men are saying, well, I don't want to be the girl all the time. I don't want to be the submissive. I want to be able to dominate in certain instances. And so the problem comes when a woman doesn't know how to shut it off.
That's a very good point.
And Sally, and you would say what to this? That was quite interesting the way Andrea put that out there, in a very PC way as well, by the way. But what would you say about
that? I'm trying.
You are doing well. I am you're remarkable. Sally? What do you think
to
that?
I absolutely agree, because I am guilty of it from time to time. You know, when we finish publishing a book, you know, it's hard to come down from it. And I have to remember that, you know, I have a life with my husband too, and it's separate from the book. And I have to be careful not to always be talking about, you know, the publishing, the book, the publisher, what we're doing, and so forth. And remember that we share a life together. And I have to remind myself, and it's difficult sometimes. You get very wrapped up in it. And fortunately, I have a good mate. But I find myself guilty of it. It's sometimes hard to turn off.
What constitutes with men and women? And, you know, Andrea, you know, when you answer this, I would like you to answer this, and then, but folks should know your background too, because you help people through the psychology of some of this as a physician too with what you do, and folks probably should know that, which is why your books and the things you're doing are so interesting. But when it comes to men and women in relationships, what do you think with that? You know, we've brought it into the pursuit of pleasure, but we're talking about all of the societal thing and the pay gap and all of that. It's kind of a trade-off in the bedroom, I guess, is what I would say. And I'm wondering if you'd put it out there for us and tell us, what's the healthiest relationship you see out there with men and women? Like, and let's just talk as adults here. I mean, how many times does a healthy relationship have relations a week? How many times do they have sex in a week? I mean, and how does that role go back and forth or reverse with men and women? Is that a fair question?
I think it's a fair question. It's certainly something we see every day in sex education and sex therapy. You know, the healthiest couples maintain sexual relationships at least once to three times a week. Of course, that can vary with illness, with life commitments with the kids or family or travel or stress at work. So it can certainly vary, but it becomes a problem when you get down to only having relations once a month or less, because, hey, let's just keep it real. Tensions build up. I think the healthiest relationship for anyone is to be able to know yourself and to fully embrace your body and your energies. And that means for a man, as well as for a woman, recognizing that you have, you know, sort of masculine energy and feminine energy, and they will ebb and they will flow. There will be times when you want to be more dominant and times when you want to just chill. And for a woman in particular, to really fully embrace who you are as a woman means still being sexual and sensual.
Yeah, one of the things, can I speak honestly with you, Sally, and Andrea, like that would change, right? Can I be straight with both of you a moment? Sally, is that okay?
I expect nothing less.
Like that would change it all here, but I have to qualify that a moment. But all right, so what bothers me with these, and I'm hoping maybe you can shed some light on this, but dealing with a healthy relationship again, one of the things that bother me is that it's always expected at a certain time of the day. Women have this thing that it's supposed to be at, you know, in the evening, and it's supposed to be at a certain time, and it's supposed to, it's like you have to set an appointment for it. And I find it so ridiculous. Like, I just, when I want to make love, if it's at the middle of the day or over breakfast or whatever, it's terrific, let's do it. And so I think there's a thing with women where they get so hung up in it, when it should be or how should it be. And the other thing is, I don't think women in this category can keep up with men, quite frankly. Because for me, not to be a wise guy here, but, you know, I think it should happen daily. I think men and women should have relationships and make love on a daily basis, unless they're sick again or something's happening, Andrea, as you mentioned. And I understand those things. But I think once a month, that's ridiculous. You might as well be a monk and move to the mountains somewhere. I mean, that's insane. So how would you answer me back, since you're the doctor and what have you? Am I unreasonable with all that, or...?
Well, you know that I recommend for my female clients to have at least three orgasms a week. So no, I'm with you on that. Whether it needs to be daily, that's up for debate. But in terms of your comment about the timing,
yeah.
I am 100% with you. You know, in the book, the Orgasm Prescription, there's a 21-day program for heightened pleasure and deeper intimacy and orgasmic bliss. And I specifically ask women to rethink the timing, because if coming at home at night you're feeling depleted, and after the kids are done and the dishes are done, the last thing you want to do is get freaky, then you need to look at other times of day and or other venues. It doesn't always have to be in the bedroom. So I'm with you on that. We need to mix it up. We need to be turned on and stimulated throughout our day so that we don't compartmentalize that sexual energy so much.
Andrea, your book is good for men to read as well, obviously, but probably even more so, right?
That's what's been really funny in the last years.
Yeah.
Yes, the guys are eating it up, just saying, look, I got to understand what's going on in my woman's mind.
Have you done an audio book with this yet?
Oh, yes.
Yeah,
it's juicy.
You do? I got to get the audio book, girl. You got to send me that. I want the audio book, man. Because you've got a great voice, and I can see you doing the, oh, man, I need the audio book. Where
do
you
go?
We got to get that, girl, for sure. That's got to be a great read. But you see what we're saying, though, and this is healthy. You know, a lot of people, Sally, don't want to talk about this stuff, which I just find ridiculous. Because, you know, it's like, this is like part of life. This is life. And like, so I don't see what the problem is and why some people find they blush and get really insensitive about this kind of talk. I don't really understand it. It's not dirty to have relationships and to have sex with the person you love or whatever, you know? Yeah.
I'm just lying on the couch getting all this free advice.
Oh, she's. I think she's. She, that's our. That's our sign, Andrea. She's so she's lying on the couch getting advice. Well, she's the doctor, so you'll have to listen to Andrea on that point. And at that moment, I'll tell you what. Let's talk about what I had asked you folks a little bit earlier coming into the segment about maybe a law or two or something that might pass, that mandates that women are paid the same as men. And that same thing with various backgrounds and ethnicity, they should be as well, obviously. That's the same argument or same conversation, really. And what about this glass ceiling? What is that? Is that really broken yet? Or are we still breaking the glass ceiling? And, you know, we hear that a lot. We've talked about it. So, hey, there's a whole paradigm here going on here. But I'll tell you what, I am learning every moment on this show, and I hope you are as well. We'll be right back.
Welcome. You're listening to Life, Liberty, and the Pursuit of Pleasure. Today, the co-host, we have Dr. Andrea Pennington, myself, Sally Fernandez, and the ever-charming Malcolm Out Loud. And before we broke the last segment, we were talking about whether or not we needed Congress to get involved. And there actually is the Equal Pay Act of 1963. So we can say that we've gone from 54 cents to 82 cents in 54 years. And it's not enough. So there is a law, but it's not being followed. So it goes back to the questions we talked about earlier about empowering women, giving them the skills to negotiate, getting the messages out, having them fight for it. But Malcolm, you also mentioned the glass ceiling. And I don't know if that's just a phrase that's bantered around or it exists other than to describe exactly what we've been talking about.
Will we have, I want to ask you, when you just mentioned the glass ceiling, Sally, will we have a woman president in our lifetime? Sally, will we?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And we just haven't had the right candidate, but absolutely.
Yeah. Andrea, do you think we will?
I do. I'm a lot more optimistic than I would have been a few years ago. But mm-hmm. To be honest, if you'd asked me 10 years ago, I wouldn't believe that I'd have a black president in my lifetime.
Right.
So we're making leaps and bounds. But Sally, I've got a question for you. I mean, with this Equal Pay Act, you know, who challenges it? Mm. Who would be the one to challenge it? It would still be a woman having to make that case, wouldn't it?
Exactly. Exactly. And they're not doing it.
Yeah.
Well, there are plenty of good women in government and in other roles, in corporate women, who could step up, back to what you've been asking about, Andrea, who challenges that. You know, Sally, I forgot and didn't realize and completely forgot that it was as low as, what'd you say, 54 cents back in...
It was in 1963, it was 54 cents.
Well, that's insane. That's just totally insane. But it's all been insane. If you remember, at one point, women couldn't even vote.
Yeah.
I mean, and you can bring it, dial it all the way back. And some of the things, you look at human beings and humanity, and we are a strange group, I have to tell you. And how we've progressed to this point and been so slow, it's like we're making giant steps, the leaps now forward. What took hundreds and thousands of years to make any progress, you know what I mean? Right?
Yeah, everything is exponential. And I think, you know, it took 54 years to get, 30 more cents on the dollar. But I think within the next 10 years, I just don't think parity is going to be a real problem in the next 5 to 10 years.
Mm.
You think we're going to get there then?
I do.
Yeah. I think I agree with you. Do you agree with that, Andrea?
I do. I'm feeling a lot more optimistic. Yeah.
Yeah. All right.
There are more women in CEO positions. There are more women in powerful government positions. And they're going to be the ones that are going to, they'll have to get together and they'll have to make an impact. But I think it will happen.
Yeah. When I was in the business environment and the business world on the corporate side some years ago now, actually women were the top ones running my organization and our company, and they were paid more than the men.
And there are some careers where that's true.
Yeah, well, they were making the hard decisions, and they were doing the heavy lifting. Those are the people that were running the company. It never dawned on me that you would pay them less.
Well, we've said it before. Your thoughts and your stance are definitely the exception to the rule. And I'm, you know, to Sally's point earlier, I'm grateful that you have, you know, launched this show where we can talk about these women's issues, life, liberty, and the pursuit of pleasure. You know, kudos to you again, Malcolm.
Well, this was like a the craziest idea that I mean, it's just, I don't know, sometimes it just happens, Andrea, that way, you know. I don't know why, but yeah, there, I really feel good about this because we have such dynamic women on the show, you know, and such a great group of people. It would be impossible for me to get this group together, and it'd almost be impossible. And these are all people I would love to work with in some capacity. You understand, you know? Mm-hmm. So it was so cool to bring this together and say, okay, let's do something worldwide in a very unique way. And then to bring in places like, you know, Australia and Monaco you know, Europe, Denmark, you know, and get the different perspectives. And you can see how each mindset is, Sally, because you were on with Iben Trenholm, a journalist in Denmark, who's one of our co-hosts here. And wasn't she phenomenal?
Oh, it was fascinating. And to hear her perspective of the U.S.,
yeah, I love Iben. Yeah, Andre, you haven't met her yet, but you will. Yeah.
Yeah, I look forward to it.
Yeah, she's great. She's strong, and she's got a lot of different belief structure, but she's dynamite. I did a live television interview with her out of Rome just a few months back. I was in Italy, and we did a television interview. She goes to Russia a lot and does that. So anyways, gives us some more fuel to talk about. And that's what I also like, is the eclecticness of all the different talents here around the world. So it's really, really cool. So the glass ceiling, I want to bring it back to that a moment and talk about what is, you know, say, well, we talk about that. What does that really mean? I think the glass ceiling is sort of that presidency, which is why Hillary Clinton was using that so much in her campaign speak, you know, is that she was addressing that in such a way because she realized that that was like the last frontier, you know, that women had to slay to get down to say, okay, we made it now, you know. And of course, this has happened in many other countries already. We've just been slow to the dance. And many other women, countries have had phenomenal women leaders, you know, I know many. And but we haven't done that here yet in the States. But it is just a matter of time, I think. But that is the probably the last piece. Do you think when we get there that's kind of, we sort of have broken the glass ceiling? Then isn't that what that means, you think, ladies?
Well, the glass ceiling was used and bantered around in corporate world for a long time, and it meant the same thing, getting up to those top executive positions. I think the glass ceiling has been broken by the mere fact that we do have CEO women, we do have strong women in the government. Hillary used it in terms of the presidency, mm-hmm. but the ceiling has been broken. There's just still a lot of fight in certain areas where women need to be recognized, and the presidency is one of them.
Right. There you go. And that's well put. And until they step up, though, and demand, back to what we started this with in the first segment, and until they demand with that wage gap. But Andrea, you brought up an interesting point when you talked about, which we haven't really talked about on this production, but at the ethnicity point of view, that Guardian article talks a lot. Now, we said Asians make more, they work hard. You pointed that out, Sally. But again, when you look at blacks or Hispanics, it's a different story there. Comment on that, Andrea.
Well, I think it comes back to what we discussed earlier about the perception of people. So I think to Sally's point, we were talking about how an Asian man would earn more than a white man, and maybe it's because of their work ethic. But I think the other side of that is there is this perception that, oh, Asians are smart and they work harder. Oh, we've got to compete, so we want to have a few good Asians in our company, so we'll pay them more. And I think when you look at the cultural view on minorities, the Latinos and African Americans, you can see that there is this perception that they are worth less. So if the white man is in the hiring position, and if he indeed feels that these ethnicities are worth less, you know, that's one angle for this pay disparity.
See, but again, it's a stereotype, a total stereotype.
It is. And it's a cultural stereotype that's existed for, you know, for a very long time.
Hmm. You know, I know a bank where there was a CEO was a white banker, and he passed away, and they put a female Latino who was the VP. She became the president of the bank. And she was like, really, she was the one who ran the show while he was getting the credit. Why? Because he was a bit of a, I'll save my opinion, but he wasn't the brightest bulb in the package. But she was. And I knew them well. I knew both of them well. And I've often wondered if she got the same thing when she became president of the bank and when he passed away. I don't really know because I never did pursue that. But it kind of brings me to that question. I mean, it's got to come back to them asking and demanding that they're paid equal pay. And back to what, Sally, you said, back to the 54 cents that we've made those kinds of strides, I think that this is, this has got to be put out to the strong women who are already out there in the corporate setting and in the government setting to stand up and say, you know what? Like you said, there's so many laws on the books right now that are not being followed through, right? And they're not doing what they should be doing. So what you asked me, Andrea, in a previous show we had about what do we got to do? Well, I said to you, like everything else in this world, you got to get out and you got to march or do something. You got to have a movement. I don't know what I mean. You know, you don't do it by doing nothing. So maybe that's what this show is: life, liberty, and the pursuit of pleasure. Maybe this is sort of starts to stimulate in conversation for people to consider and think that okay. We're all sort of equal, and we all are equal. I truly believe that. Women, men, backgrounds, race, color, I think it should cover all the divides. If you're capable of doing the same job and role that others are doing, there's absolutely not a reason in the world why you should be paid a dime less.
Agreed.
Right, Sally?
Agreed.
Yeah. So that's what it is right now. And so I think we take that further now and we realize that so until we get to that point of moving the ball forward, this is sort of what we're dealing with. And I think if you take the rest of the advice we've given you today on the show in how to have the best relationship and then how to, you know, how we should all be and I think it is interesting, these stereotypes, because, and I guess I never subscribed to the stereotype, but when I said to you, this is how I would act, and I'm perfectly fine with that, well, that's what I mean by that, is that, and, all right, so everybody that's listening right now, okay, so when you're, the guys that are listening, let me speak to you just right now, so this isn't for Sally and Andrea, this is for you guys out there listening, so when your woman comes home tonight, whatever, your woman, your significant other, your could be your wife, could be whatever, your lover, whoever it is. So just change it up. Do something different. You know, hand her a drink when she comes into the door. Do that. And then, you know, turn on this show after the fact, depending what time you're coming in or something, right? But, and let her hear this. But anyway, step out and do something different. And that's another thing. I want to encourage people to change it up. You know, we all become creatures of habit. That's something I talk against all the time. But change your paradigm up. Try something different. And don't procrastinate and don't become complacent. These are human ailments. I always talk about that as being human ailments, and you can overcome those things by making a change and trying something different. So I guess it, now Sally says she's already got that. Andrea, do you have to change that in your life, or do you have that as well already? I wonder.
You mean a man that would rub my feet when I come in?
Yeah, you never told me that. I have no idea. Does he do that now, or is he just a?
Well, I have someone in my life, but we live in different cities. So no, I don't have that on the regular. But he's also very attentive and would never bat an eye at, you know, pampering or taking care of me, and is quite comfortable with the fact that I earn a little bit more than him.
There you go. They see my kind of gal, man. I told you that before in the previous show, but so hopefully you got it from both sides. And Sally, you're blessed. You already have that. So what do you complain about?
I complain about nothing.
You don't.
Except the world. Everything else going on in the world.
Yeah, but you don't even really complain about that, because one thing about you is you try to find solutions, don't you?
Yeah, I do. What's the point of complaining? I mean, it's all about making it a better world, finding the positive. That's what I try to do.
Well, you're an optimist. You truly, truly are an optimist. And I find
that. You always think I'm a pragmatist.
What's that?
You always call me a pragmatist.
Well, you're that too, but you're also an optimist. You're not
talent.
You're not a pessimist, though.
No. What's the point? It's wasted energy.
Right. So you can be pragmatic and be an optimist sometimes. Isn't that okay, Andrea?
Absolutely.
Nothing wrong with that, right?
I just find the healthy balance.
Yeah, I mean
That's right.
that's the way it should be for all of us. So I think everybody can take something and learn something from what you're saying, and hopefully improve their own life. And that's the key of the show. Well, anyways, let's talk. Let's now bring you forward and understand that our show, Life, Liberty, and the Pursuit of Pleasure. If you're listening to us on any of the networks like iHeartRadio or TuneIn or any of the talk radio networks out there, you might even get this from iTunes for that matter, who knows? But you can get it from the talk radio networks, but you can also get it on our streaming apps. Whether you have an Android or an Apple, just go to the App Store and put in America Out Loud Talk Radio, and you'll see that red icon come up with the talk on it. And that's the one to download. And you'll get the show every day, 5 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. You'll find it here on the network. We replay it again at 11 p.m. that day. And it doesn't hit our podcast network till about 2 days after now. So if you want to hear the latest show, you got to tune in that day to hear it on our talk radio network. And again, any of the talk radio networks out there, just look for America Out Loud Talk Radio. We're on a lot of them. And if we're not on the one you're looking at, guess what you do next? Contact them and tell them they need America Out Loud Talk Radio. And we can make that happen, hopefully. So we are one of the fastest growing networks in the world, and we're seeing that with all of our numbers and all the cool things going on. So we invite you back again. By the way, there's links to those apps right on americaoutloud.com, right on the homepage. You can't miss it. It's right up there in the front part. We have a neat little player up there where you see the latest show happening and some really, really cool things going on. But there's so much happening back on our platform. So we're excited to have you with us today as we continue to bring these, what I'm calling kind of a magical show every day with something unique. And what really kind of piques my curiosity more than anything is the kind of topics we're taking on. You can tune in one day and we're talking again, as Andrea, we could talk about having orgasms in the bedroom. And on the next day, we could talk about how to, what kind of societal changes and what government should do for us next, or how to fight climate change. We have some very interesting topics coming in the hopper here in the days and weeks ahead as we continue to rally around some of the most fascinating and unique, but highly opinionated women in the world. And again, this has been Andrea Pennington, Sally Fernandez, and Malcolm Out Loud. To be continued.